Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, get out of that shot microphone boom and get into the doom room. I'm Alex and I'm doomed.
Guile says sonic boom and I say welcome to the doom room. I'm Justin and I'm doomed.
I'm Pete. You guys are still doing this in season two?
Season two. It's been months since we last watched Doom Patrol, ever so long. But finally, the show is back, and we're going to be talking about the season two premiere, Fun Size Patrol. Now, if you haven't...
Great name.
Great name. Well, actually, before we get into it, because I know you like to stop and talk about the names, Pete, you're also a big candy fan. How do you feel about Fun Size Candy? There's a lot of discussion in the community about it.
Right.
Yes, I mean, the candy community.
Yeah. I love a Fun Size, you know, as long as they don't mess with it. It's just like, you just got to shrink ray it. Otherwise, you know, it's not the same thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. What?
I think he's trying to tie into the show here, but I legitimately want to know what you think of Fun Size Candy, Pete.
No, I mean, I'm saying that, like, you know, the Kit Kat only gives you two bars. Get out of here with that shit. You know what I mean? You're throwing me four or it's not a Kit Kat.
Well, you have four tinier bars as opposed to...
Twix is only one. I don't know what the fuck this is. Go fuck yourself. That's not a Twix.
You started positively, but I think the takeaway here is you fall on the size of Fun Size less fun.
No, I'm saying, like, there are candy bars that get it right, like Snickers or Three Musketeers or something, that just shrink what is the normal bar. And then there's people who chintz on you, and then it's like, well, this ain't even fucking, like, having it.
What do you think they're doing with the Snickers? What do
you think they're actually shrinking it? So you're getting the same amount of flavor, it's just
Yeah, I want to taste, you know, experience that is similar to what I would with the real size. But in a fun size situation.
We have fun size, we have full size, and then, of course, unfun size, which is too big.
That's like called king size. It's called king size.
Oh, I think it's an unfun size.
Is there such a thing as too big?
Well, again, I mean, not again, but as we all know, monarchy is bad. So king, I agree with you, that is the unfun size. It rules the candy aisle with an iron fist.
Wow. Wow. Man, here's Alex trying to overthrow King George.
Also, while we're doing ridiculous bits instead of starting the episode, I was hoping the DC logo look would have some kind of extra shine on it for season two, a little extra something, sauce, nothing. I was a little disappointed. I feel like if a show gets a second season, you should throw them some more love. You know?
If anything, I could be wrong about this, but they took away some of the sauce because even though this season, I believe, was on DC Universe, the DC Universe logo was gone. And instead it said HBO Max Original at the beginning versus the first season. They still had it on there, even though it is only on HBO Max at this point. So,
well, guys, let's keep the conversation fun size here and move on to talk about the rest of the show.
Sure.
Well,
so,
I think it is tough to lose DC Universe. I mean, you know, I definitely liked a lot of the stuff.
I wasn't a supporter of it.
I actively
worked against them.
No. I thought, like, it had some cool stuff. And plus, you know, the comics right there is a nice option to, like, hey, this TV show is cool. Let me check out the source material. I like the idea of it.
I have a solution for you. Why don't you get all of the DC superheroes tattooed on your arm so before you watch anything, you can just look at your arm and then see it?
Yeah, but you got to do the cool, like, camera angle stuff. You know what
I mean?
You
could just move your arm around. And
just
like,
flex
that.
It. I don't want to flex on you guys at the start of every, you know.
You could do that thing. You could do, like, you get, I know it's not a DC character, but you get, like, a Hulk there who's, like, Bruce Banner. And then when you flex your huge muscles, he turns into the Hulk.
Wow, that,
let's not miss the chance to talk about Pete's jacked ass muscles.
Pete is the yoked jackalope of the podcast.
Oh man,
that's right.
It's nice to see the yoked jackalope back. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Major character. Who knew? Would have known that one-off conversation about the jackalope from America's Funniest People would end up being a major part of our lives.
Yeah. Let's very briefly talk about what happened in this episode, just in case you haven't watched it in a while. So the entire Doom Patrol has been shrunk down. They're living on Cliff's model while they're trying to figure out how to get bigger. Larry,
which is a great idea.
Great idea. Larry is working on that with Niles, but it's not working. So ultimately, Niles has to rely on Willoughby to do it and makes a deal that we don't know the full ramifications of yet.
Which was Rita's idea, by the way.
But the main thrust of this episode is really meeting Dorothy, his daughter, for real. We find out she has these powers, these imaginary friends that she can make seemingly real, and they're all terrifying and all have different abilities and things. And by the end of the episode, everybody is back to regular size, not fun size, in fact.
Wait, you thought Darling was terrifying?
Yes. Perhaps the most terrifying.
What?
They're all terrifying.
Darling was adorable. Lady? Darling didn't do anything bad to anybody.
How about this? When she moves her head in this way where it's like, that's like a scary robot way of moving your head.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, you like Darling. That's very weird. Anyway, at the end of the episode, they're all regular size, but we do have a setup for a lot of different character arcs for everybody, which I'm sure we'll get into here. Now, again, broad strokes, just because we're starting off here at a new season. And Justin, I know you weren't totally satisfied with the season one finale. Given that, how'd you feel about the season two pickup?
Well, let me just say, I like the finale. It just didn't feel like a finale. Like, I love this show. I think the show is great. Again, I wish someone had just told us about it before now.
It's crazy that not a single person on our Patreon Slack ever mentioned it.
Stop. You guys are horrible people.
Or just passersby. If it's not a close person, at least a stranger should just, like, look over and be like, here's your mail. Also, have you checked out Doom Patrol?
I don't agree with this bit. I do not sign off on this bit.
The stranger, just to check, is your mailman?
What, you know your mailman?
I do.
You know your mail person?
Barbara is my mail person. She's amazing.
Yeah, I also know my mail person's name.
What's the name, Alex?
We don't have time for this. Go on with what you were saying about the episode.
Interesting. You're claiming a huge relationship with your mail person. You don't know their first name.
Man, now I'm picturing my mailman listening to this podcast and a lone tear going down his face.
Oh, Alex.
The app
bills.
Starts with London 1927, which
Wait.
Justin,
I know
was
you
talking about
need
the
us to start talking about this for some unknown reason. But this first episode, everyone's back in sort of a darker place.
Yeah.
A lot of the work that they did on their individual mental states has sort of fallen back. Rita still in a leadership role and feels like the most ready to move forward, but everyone else is unhappy and maybe getting worse.
Yeah, and also like Niles keeps getting worse. Like, Niles can't stop being an asshole. Like, Rita's like, hey, you should probably talk to that Willoughby. And he's like, shut up, Rita. And then he goes and does that exactly. It was like, what are you, can't you just fucking try being nice to people?
Well,
you completely fucked over all of these people's lives and you're just continue to be the worst.
Well, think about it from a guilt perspective. Like he came clean and said that he messed up their lives, but through science. And they're like, "All right, we are mad at you. We'll help you save your daughter. Now, do the one thing we need you to do using science: make us big." And he fails at it over and over and over again. So, yeah, he's a little sensitive to being called out by Rita in front of everybody. He is still not doing a good job. He's trying to stay positive despite the fact that everything sucks, and he's scared of his daughter.
And I'll maintain, I know we had a disagreement about this last season, but I'll maintain that he is doing the wrong things for the right reasons. I think I'm saying that correctly this time, where he is trying to make them big. He is lashing out at them, but also they're all being very selfish this episode. They're all being focused on themselves. And ultimately, I think the lesson of this episode is they are better and stronger when they work together with each other and when they support each other. Because for the most of the episode, like, for example, I know Dorothy is almost 100 years old probably at this point, but she's a kid and they are being
100-year-old kid.
That's the movie with Steve Carell, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah. A 40-year-old virgin? Is that what you're talking about?
Either way.
This sequel.
Yes.
The sequel that nobody wants.
They're being very mean to her, or they're being dismissive to her. There's that conversation that Cliff and Jade have where they talk about, like, what did Niles fuck to come up with her, which is gross.
Well, I mean, come on. They were, you know, hanging out by Danny the Brick.
By the Brick. They were hanging out by the Brick.
Come on, man. Danny the Brick, the most accepting Brick in the entire universe. Yeah. Like, we don't get a lot of insight there, but that's double rude. It's not just rude to Dorothy. Triple rude. It's not just rude to Dorothy. It's not just rude to Niles. It's rude to Danny as well.
Wow. Danny needs a little gossip hangout. They're the only ones even acknowledging Danny the Brick's existence. Nobody else comes to visit Danny the Brick. They're over there having a conversation.
Oh, do you think Danny the Brick is a sassy bitch who loves gossip?
I don't know, but it's nice to be included in some kind of gossip circle.
Sassy Brick who loves gossip.
Yes, you're right. That is a really sweet thing to include people in some nasty gossip.
Mm-hmm. About people who are on the other side of the Brick.
Yeah. Just on the other side. That was a fun reveal. Like, oh,
always
right
check
there.
Every side of the Brick before you start talking shit. That's my advice. I don't want to do the advice section early, but let me say, check all sides of Brick.
Where were you at Stonewall? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, that is not.
Whoa.
Dude.
Whoa. I actually don't know what I'm
what
saying.
What just
there.
Happened?
Yep. That's why you'll probably have to go back and cut that part out.
Almost definitely.
Oh,
now,
man.
I think everyone is being selfish, like you're saying, Alex, and just caught up in their own shit. And I think it culminates in the moment where they go and see Jane, Cliff, and Dorothy go to see they go to rescue Dorothy, who is feeding the rats. And they're like going to go kill some rats. Ha ha, fun. Then they see the rat mom giving birth and then eating the runt rat. And that's where I think it locks into place. Like, hey, nature's hard. Living is hard. Why don't we be nice to each other and help each other out here rather than having dumb fights or like going and killing rats to get our anger out or whatever they had planned there?
Yeah, I think that's a really good reading of it. And I mean, this points to just overall, I love this episode. I thought this was a great season premiere that does a really good job of setting up not new conflicts for each of the characters, but extended conflicts for each of the characters. It sets them up for something that brings them to this next stage with Jane, with Larry, with Cliff, with everybody else on the team, including Niles here, who has been mostly off screen for the first season. We get a lot more about him here and a lot more involved here, which I thought was really nice. And like you said, that really does come together in the whole rat storyline, which is a perfect Doom Patrol storyline, tying into Cliff's deal with Admiral Whiskers from season one. Now he's just fighting rats. That's all he's got.
Killing them.
Rats.
If he was
skinning
just
them.
Punching them at first, but then Niles pushed him, and then he was wearing Admiral Whiskers, and that was hilarious and
it
sad.
It wasn't
at
necessarily
the same time.
Admiral Whiskers.
It was
just
that was
a
Admiral
rat.
Whiskers.
That was Second Lieutenant Big Ears, I think. If I know my rat Navy pretty well, mm-hmm. I think okay. that's that.
I think Admiral Whiskers was destroyed when Danny the Street was changed into Danny the Brick last season.
I would think so.
Yes.
Do you think, though, that it was like, oh, man, okay, guys, great job in season one. What are we going to do with season two? It's like, well, let's just really make it more insane. They're like, I don't know, guys. Like, maybe we shouldn't have this creepy candle monster that makes kids make wishes. Like, I don't know. It seems like a lot at the
wish.
Top. They're like, oh, stop.
Make wish.
That's the kind
Pete.
Of genie that we need.
Make wish, Pete.
I feel like it could have been...
Do
know,
you want me to put the candle on? Should I put the candle on a cake or
Justin
just in your hand?
Dying. Make wish. I'm gonna make you make a wish by the end of the season, Pete. It's gonna happen.
I thought like maybe we could have like eased into the craziness, but we just went hard.
If you do want to go back and talk about the first scene, I thought that was great because like we talked about the last episode with the season one finale, it's weird that they don't have Dorothy there and you don't see her, which is mostly because of casting things. So getting right to
face,
it,
you see just her back. She has a front, we learned. Big reveal in this
episode. Big reveal.
But getting to see her at the circus, getting to see how she was tortured, it gives you sympathy for her immediately. Like, I think we already have natural sympathy for a little girl in pigtails who talks like this with a little, like a like an orphan from a musical. Me. Not lilt. You?
No, I'd step on that kid in a second.
What?
What?
Just because someone has pigtails and talks with an accent doesn't mean they, you know, can walk wherever they want. You know what I mean?
What happened to you?
Walk where they want? Yeah, who? What did you get? Just insulted saying, like, by a 4-year-old ragamuffin?
I just, you know, just being a little bendel stick and, you know.
What did Tiny Tim do to you, Pete?
Did you get beat up by the apple dumpling gang?
I'm just saying that, you know.
Well, Mr. Scrooge, let's go kick Pete LePage's little ass. That's what I want to do on Christmas Day.
Oh, man.
Pete was put in the hospital for a month by the cast of Oliver.
Yeah. Pete loves gruel. He was the one orphan, and Oliver was like, I like it here. You guys get the fuck out.
Okay, I guess if I'm the only one that thought it was like, you know, really insane out of the box.
No, that's what I'm saying is I think it goes very hard there with the scene with Dorothy where we get to meet her, we get to understand her because she's the focal point for the episode. She's our in here, like imagining somebody who had never watched the first season, just spitballing here. Maybe not a lot of people had DC Universe. So the fact that the second season, you do provide this in through Dorothy, where she is interacting and seeing all of the characters and reintroducing us, resetting the conflicts. That's really important up front, but also showing that she's not just this little girl who is very innocent and, you know, just kind of there to be fun and youthful, but in fact, it has this hugely dangerous power where we don't even get to see it, which is very effective. We just get to hear.
We get to see it. Like a bunch of people died in that circus.
But we get to see the aftermath. We get to imagine what happened when the jackal.
A dude's head was just laying on the ground there.
Yeah, maybe it fell off. I don't know. But you can imagine what
happens
to
a lot of circus people.
Mm-hmm. Their heads fall off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a
Dumb
condition.
And Dumber. Our pets' heads are falling off.
You know, my, and this is true for anybody listening out there, my wife was in the circus, the Ringling Brothers Circus, for 4 years, and there was a condition called loose head. This is also true, so just randomly people's heads would fall off.
I like that you didn't say what your wife did in the circus, and maybe you shouldn't, allowing people to, much like the monster, not really establishing what it was, and let people's imaginations run wild.
Sure, I can say it, though. She was a decapitator.
Wow. Oh man,
yeah. What a
dangerous
skill.
The circus is.
Well,
dangerous.
Justin, I think I've talked about it and Pete's talked about it. What was your take on Dorothy? How did you feel about her?
I like the way she is this sweet girl who has this huge threat inside of her, and her relationship where we end in the episode with Niles. She overhears Niles talk about her as like basically a riddle he has to solve. Again, further pushing the two of them apart. I mean, the only way he wins before the candle monster comes out is by saying, you want me to send you away again? So Niles, as we know, is not a great leader, not a great father, not great at caring for people. And I think that the team is going to have to fill that gap, because I think what they learned over the course of first season is that they can care for each other. And they've lost that a little bit, but need to learn it again, perhaps, in this season.
Also, he's got thin skin. You can't let people sit on the side of a brick and let them talk shit about you a little bit after you ruin their lives. I mean, come on.
You're going to sit on the other side of the brick and let them talk shit without rolling out? Well, you're just going to be like, oh, keep going.
I would be like, hey, you know what? I've been horrible to you. I've ruined your lives. So, yeah, I could take it a little bit. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. All right.
Let me throw this out, Pete. You've become more Cliff than Cliff in the TV show.
Cliff's my favorite character. I take that as a compliment.
Wow. Revelation. Shock.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Cliff then and what's going on here. We touched on the rat fighting, which is very fun. This is a great showcase for Brendan Fraser cursing more than anything. He does some stellar cursing in this episode.
He reminded me of like a young Pete LePage working on a tiny car, swearing a blue streak. It's fun stuff.
I mean, it was amazing to see him get to race again. Like, there were moments of pure joy for like Cliff to be able to race again and have fun. I mean, until the flashback started happening and things went horribly wrong. But for a couple of seconds there, it was really nice for Cliff.
It was terrifying, that race. Those cars go too fast. Maybe I've grown old. But those cars are going too fast. Slow down the model cars.
It was hilarious. But also the car gets knocked off later, right?
In yeah, that was hysterical. Funny. I mean, to show you that, no, they're not going that fast. It's just on that little racetrack, and it's not too fast because they cut to the giant table.
I mean, this is a little bit of a side note, not having to do Cliff, but shout out to the production and set design on this episode in particular, which was so fun. All of the stuff with the tiny world was perfect. The gigantic pancakes. Like the pancakes that Larry made tiny, but then were still too large for him. Yeah. Them,
it's perfect,
super fun.
The little joint.
Larry making those pancakes was so cute. Like he was just being so careful.
That was the tough thing. Well, I don't know if we want to get into Larry, but I mean, it was really heartbreaking to see him. He's doing all these amazing things, but you can't go save your son, bro. You can't save your son.
So this gets into something. Just tying up the Cliff and Larry conversations, but I think this goes for everybody across the board. They do a really good job of taking what we already knew about the characters from season one and then setting up these new conflicts. Like Cliff, so much of season one was focused on Clara, his daughter, and reconnecting her. Bless you, Pete. And then here we get this twist. Presumably, it's going to focus more on his relationship with his father, which we don't know anything about and we hadn't heard about here. So that's potentially what that's going to be going forward. And Larry, same thing. I'm glad you're starting once again, Pete. Very angry at Larry here at the beginning of the season, because I have a feeling you're going to turn by the end of the season once again.
I don't think so, man. I'm really mad at him.
After focusing on his relationship with John, now the negative spirit is like, yo. This gets to a question that I think, Justin, you brought up last season, is what is his connection to his kids? Where are his kids? And that's what we dig into really heavily in this episode.
Well, in watching this, so we get his son dies, presumably by taking his own life. And the negative spirit connects him to him in that moment. And then we see when he's reading the obituary that he has another son who is also a veteran. So I think we're probably going to see him try to track down that son and what his life is. But
he'll go save that son, but not the one that was dying?
Well, it was too late for that son.
It wasn't too late. The fucking negative spirit was like, you got time, bro. Let's go. And he was like, no, I can't. I got to make little pancakes. You fuck.
Jesus.
So mean.
I don't think this would happen at all. It's the same thing as the John thing, where he kind of understands on some level that he's seeing something that really happened, but maybe he doesn't 100% realize it until he sees that headline.
Oh, you don't realize it? The fucking negative being is the one that's showing you what's what, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that can't
but
be real.
But it has
not
the
really
aspect of
son.
A dream, because his son is still in his son's bedroom.
Negative
from what
spirit.
He was in-
showed him what's happening. He's done this before. It's happened before. And now all of a sudden you don't believe
he'll get it by the third time. Give him some slack.
But negative spirit shows him memories all the time too. It is a confusing thing. And I also want to say, how does a negative spirit know what's up? Was he just got the news?
He's like one with the universe. You know what I mean? It's a light
with
beam,
all a bunch
like,
of people.
Yeah.
With a bunch of people all around the
just
world.
Just Larry's relatives and loved ones. That's it.
Wow. That's nice.
Don't question the light being knowing what's
chain.
Up. Like, what the fuck, bro?
I'm not questioning it. I just
it
think it's an
like
interesting.
You are.
I'm saying, back is it just Larry's friends?
Here's what I think.
Wait, why do you love the light being and you hate Larry? It doesn't make any sense.
That's exactly where I stand.
I assume that the negative spirit is probably on the Trainer family Facebook group or facehole, I guess, in this world. And that's where he's getting all of this news. Larry doesn't know how to use it, so he just doesn't know yet.
Classic. Are you saying that the negative spirit is Mark Zuckerberg once and for all?
Yes. I mean, they have a very similar pallor.
Body shape. They have a very similar body shape.
Yes. Put some pads and a turtleneck on that negative spirit, and you got Mark Zuckerberg right there. I do think this is really good. Whatever you feel about it or how Larry treated it, I think this is a really good emotional mode for Larry to be in going forward, and I'm really interested to follow it.
Yeah. I agree. And Larry, again, sort of walks his own path in this episode, separate from everybody else.
Yeah. And we didn't really talk about the flashback either, where we get to see Larry tearing apart his son's model, which is so sad, but also points to the overall conflict that Larry has, which is this level of control. Like, he needs this level of control, and that's something we thought he got past last season, but clearly there's still a lot of other things he needs to deal with here.
Yeah, that was a tough scene.
Why don't we talk about Rita? We touched on her a little bit. How did you feel about her arc?
I mean, you guys have kids. I mean, when they come up to you and say, I really enjoyed this comic, I mean, do you guys rip into them about, like, their knowledge base and, like, how much they're really bringing to the table? Or, like, how do you handle situations like that?
Well, it depends. Are they reading some sort of pedestrian superhero stuff? Or are they really getting into the real classics? You know?
Let's say they're getting into the classics.
I'm like, well, what Alan Moore was,
More Mouse, you know.
What Alan Moore was doing with his Swamp Thing run was getting into the psychosexual nature of the swamp spirit and how it connects to the green.
Right. But I'm saying if your, you know, your child didn't quite grasp all that, you know, would you correct them? Or
my 5-year-old gets what Alan Moore was going for, I think.
Okay. All right.
She has a pretty good understanding of the larger environmental and, as I said, psychosexual context in which Alan Moore was positioning his spirit of the swamp or swamp thing.
Okay. All right. I guess.
Anyway, I tore up that that Jughead comic she was trying to enjoy and got her into Alan Moore.
So Rita's arc I really like because it brings together a lot of the things that we've been talking about with her. She really is trying to take control of her powers. It's almost an interesting counterpoint with Larry, who needs to have less control while Rita actually has to have more control. Mm. Or at least, as Cyborg pushes her, figure out a way to take her lack of control and put it into something positive. What did you think about that scene where he is essentially negging her into using her powers properly?
Yeah, that was rough to start. And then I was like, oh, okay. It was something to get her to use her powers. It would have been nice if he was like apologized afterwards. But I think, you know, it's interesting because that's what was her breakthrough was when she's standing there later and she kind of like has to kind of like channel something for it to work. Like she can't just look at the statue and her hand's going to just go do it. Like there's something else that she needs to kind of get connected with to use her power there. So, I mean, that was such a great moment when she did it. She's so excited. She runs to Vic. But Vic's gone, and I'm worried that, like, you know, we're losing Cyborg here, and we're getting Dorothy, and I'm just wondering, like, what the status quo moving forward is, because, you know, Vic helped them through a lot, you know?
Yes, and Vic does a very superhero thing with Rita, I think. He's like, he said, negs her into it. And then he's just not dealing with his problems. At least, like, the other characters have made gestures toward their issues in the past, and he just hasn't because of his superhero ego. And I think he's going to go and then eventually make his way back after something bad happens.
Well, I'm wondering if he's going to go – if he's gone to, like, talk with his father or, like, where he's gone to. You know what I mean?
I would suggest you watch episode 2 to find out, probably.
Are we going
to
keep going? We're good here.
We're done. We don't, to your point, we don't get as much Vic here, which is a little surprising. Certainly he's part of it, but he is pretty much powering through. So it will be interesting to potentially dig more into him the next episode. But I do like the place that we're finding Rita. Like I said last season, she's really becoming the heart of the team, if not necessarily the leader. And yeah, it's a great place to put her. Let's talk about Jane, who is still shooting up this episode, still repressing everything in the underground. And Hammerhead seems to be the only one who's like, yo, get your act together. This is going to get worse before it gets better.
Time for a change.
Yeah.
It's tough. But you see her at the end. She rejects all of that and goes back into the sort of heroin-esque drug. I love that they just cut to the underground early in this episode. Like, this is a setting for this season where we just go into Jane's internal. I think that's – the show is – very cool with the way it moves through the sometimes wild places that it goes.
Well, it also, to that same point, it respects the viewer's intelligence to remember what the underground is. There's nice little subtle clues through all of this stuff. Like we talked about, Dorothy is a really good in for potential new viewers for introducing the characters. But there's enough of this shout outs and tie backs to everything that happened in the first season where they don't necessarily spell it out that it makes it nice to watch. It's a rich world that only gets richer as it goes.
Yeah.
There was one other character.
I have a couple things real quick. Yeah. I like the way, so we get Niles cutting his hand in the not good way.
Yeah, we've been on about this on a bunch of different podcasts, but he cuts his palm, which is just stupid.
Just the dumbest way to cut your hand.
And that's how he conjures Willoughby with blood, a ukulele, an umbrella, and a lovely rendition of Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter, a great song.
Great song.
Is that the way you would want to be conjured, like as a sort of straight-up prank?
Yes.
Nice. I'd want blood in a harmonica playing Meatloaf's Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
Oh, rest in peace.
But you guys would have to do the duet.
Yeah. I will say if anybody cuts their palm, I'm not going to come because that's stupid. Like, you're just being dumb and you don't deserve my help at that point.
Yeah.
Oh, really? That's funny because I want tongue blood when I'm conjured.
Good old That's what they called blood. You, right? Back in college, freshman year, they're like, right. What's up, tongue blood?
And I was like, oh, tongue hell blood. Yeah, let's go to our theater class. I'm tongue blood. A freshman actor.
I did like that scene, and to the same point about this being a cumulative effect, bringing back Willoughby to do the magic stuff was very fun. What, since Pete, you've watched this full season, right? Or you watched only part of the season?
Yeah, I think I just... I dropped off somewhere in the halfway mark.
Okay. So I watched the full season. Yeah, this will be fun. So I've watched the full season here and halfway through season three. Just as a reminder, Justin, this is your first time through.
So I don't give up on stuff. I don't give up on things. I don't stop halfway through anything.
Go, tug blood. Justin, what do you think is going on with this amulet or talisman or whatever it is that Niles has given to Willoughby?
I don't know. It feels like a powerful thing. I wonder if it relates to the mother of Dorothy, like finding her was my first thought. We also get the mention of a character that I don't think we've heard of before named Iceman or Iceman or Val Kilmer from Top Gun. Oh. Is that what we're talking about here?
No. He's coming. He's coming.
It's okay. That'd be fun. That'd be fun. I don't know. I mean, we don't get any clues about it. We don't even really – it's only just very lightly gestured at that he – that's the reason they were made big. He must have communicated, I guess, mentally to
Willoughby. Well, there was a scene either got cut, if you want to say that, or they just left it off. Like when we last see them, he says, absolutely no, I'll never do that. And then a bunch of other things happen where it does feel like Niles realizes, you know what, he has to make this deal. He has to give up everything. And I do think that points to, like, I know you guys seem very anti-Niles, but this points back to what I've been talking about, where I think ultimately he does do the right thing here, even though it's going to have very bad consequences, whatever those are, down the road.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about when he lied to Dorothy? It was just like, hey, listen, you're going to be all right, and I'm not going
to. No, not that part. The part where he gave up whatever was around his neck to Willoughby, clearly that was something very bad that he didn't want to do. I'm sure there's going to be repercussions there.
You think they were like fake dog tags from Hot Topic?
That said Iceman on them?
Yeah.
Something to think about.
I
haven't seen this, so I'm offering some like very useful theories from this point.
I went into Hot Topic the other day, and they're like, hey, what are you looking for? You're looking for bomber jackets, fighter jets, army memorabilia, anything like that? We got all that stuff.
Flat jackets. Be honest, Alex, they were like, hey, old man, get out of Hot Topic. None of this stuff's for you.
Yeah. I'm goth.
I'm goth.
I said, crying, running down to the Orange Julius two stores away.
Oh, wow.
I love the layout of this mall.
A couple of other moments to call out. I really like the line, being grown up doesn't give you a pass to be an asshole. I thought that was pretty good. Made me think of you guys.
I want to say, Pete, what'd you think of the joint rolling ability of Larry? What's the smallest joint you've rolled?
Well, I don't roll small joints, so I don't know, but...
Yeah, tongue blood.
But that was adorable, the fact that, LT was taking requests and hooking things up for people, you know what I mean?
I'm tongue blood and you're baby arm, right? Because you only roll the fattest joints? That's right.
Ba-
And Alex is too old for Hot Topic.
It's called always Alex been my Spencer nickname gifts. Since college.
Hot Topic for short. We could call you Hot Topic for short.
Yeah, HT. I prefer HT. HT if you don't mind.
HTB.
HTZ.
And BA down there. BA Baracus.
Yeah. Also really like the line, "You're just a scientist who did fucked up things to a broken little girl," just because Jane is talking about Dorothy, but also clearly talking about herself. And I thought that was really nice.
I liked when Cliff called Niles a shitty scientist to his face. That was great. Mm-hmm. Fucking Niles.
Also, there's a very offhand one, but Lego figures can't be choosers. That's pretty good.
Good Willoughby line.
I mean, we got to talk about the elevator. That was hysterical. Like, Cliff got them all pumped up, and then cut to, like, the elevator just, like, taking forever to go down. Because it's a toy elevator. It's a little toy elevator.
I mean, that stuff, that and the car being super tiny and flying off, just very satisfying on a comedic level. Yeah. Like, they did the same thing, essentially the same joke in the first Ant-Man movie, where they're having this huge fight on top of the train, and then it cuts, and it's just super tiny train making tiny train noises. But
by
that's
far
what you
the best joke, of that movie, by a pretty long shot.
But this works really here, too. It's just movie. very satisfying to see that happen with the elevator, with the car, all of that stuff.
Agreed. How about the great shout out to Yellow Jackets when Cliff walks in with the rat jacket?
Oh yeah. Do you think Cliff is the Antler Queen?
I mean, let's put it out there again. Useful theory.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Oh, I just lost it. There's the whole thing with Cyborg, which we didn't really talk about, hallucinating that Mr. Nobody and Beard Hunter are gone from the painting. We get the shout out there. What do you think is going on there? Is that Mr. Nobody playing with reality again? Is that Cyborg just glitching out? What's going on?
I
think it's probably true that it happened. I think they are probably not there and just left a little picture of themselves there or whatever.
Pete?
Yeah, I mean, I was really, when Cyborg first checked on the painting, I was just kind of like, set the painting on fire, bro. Like, what are you doing? That is just a ticking time bomb that you guys are just like, we'll put right here, pause on these supervillains in this painting, no big deal.
Well, I think it looks like they're trapped in there, so they don't want to. Also, it seems like a very powerful thing, so they don't want to just get rid of it.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what would happen when you set it on fire. Any other notes from the episode? Any other moments that you guys want to call
out? Because they're in a painting.
I don't know. I don't know how magic paintings work.
Do you think Mona Lisa dies when you burn Mona Lisa?
She definitely stops smiling.
Yeah, she frowns.
She's not smiling.
She turns into the screamer.
Yeah. That's what that painting's called.
The screamer. Is it
the yeller?
Old yeller.
Loud Dan? I think
this museum got one of them old yellers going on.
I'm here to see old Dan.
Old Dan.
Loud Dan.
Well, why don't we start to wrap this up then and talk about who was most doomed this episode. Pete, who's most doomed?
The frogs. Those poor frogs that are being tested on and murdered. What the fuck, man? What if one of those is a Thor frog? You know what I mean? Like, what? You can't just kill frogs. That's fucked up.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Similar shout out to all the rat runts out there. Man, you got it hard. If you made it out, good on you.
Good on you.
Because that's not easy. Most doomed, though, in the of our Doom Patrol, I think Cyborg's the most doomed currently. Mm. He holds the doomed belt because he's left his family and not dealing with everything very well.
I'm going to say most doomed is Jane right now, where the other characters all have these paths forward or at least trying to explore what's going on with them. Jane is retreating further and further into herself, literally, and I think that's a really bad position to be put in. And also, of course, the pancakes who got totally murdered this episode.
Yeah.
If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Doom Patrol, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And now, before we wrap up here, first from season two, a piece of advice from Pete LePage.
Just because you're a kid doesn't mean you're special. All right? You got to obey the rules just like everybody else.
Wow. I don't know if that's a piece of advice so much as a threat to children.
Heavy dad energy. Multiple threats for children here. But for season two, this is Baby Arm, Hot Topic, and Tumblood signing off.